Hi fans, Maggie B here, starting out this week's episode with a quick content warning. This week's topic is cringe-worthy anime, and while you'll hear us riffing on things like repetitive plot lines and improbable animation, we also talk about some more serious subject matter, including rape, abusive relationships, and the sexualization of children and family members. If any of these topics are going to cause you personal distress, we suggest that you skip this episode, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and others. You are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. I'm Byron D0, your host with the most, and we got the band back together. It took us a little finagling and shenanigans.
Oh, real,
took us a goddamn month is what it took
us.
Yeah.
you know, the best laid plans take time. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Life happens.
Yep. Right? But I digress.
All right, and of course, as always, we've got 606, Defender of Justice here.
You got mechanical hair booting up, ready to give you the rundown on the lowdown on whatever will be coming our way.
Maggie B, what's going on? It's been a hot second, but I'm back.
And this is Megatron with the smoothest voice, bringing heaven straight to your ears.
Oh, baby.
Aw, yeah.
Woo! All right, my friends all over the interwebs. Tonight's episode is one that's been a long time coming for many of us in this room. We are doing cringeworthy anime. Now, Maggie B, I will let you take the reins on the description of this specific topic. I feel like you're the most in tune with the concept.
Oh, I guess so. Cringeworthy can be any number of things. For my pick, which I'll get into in a little bit, it can be things like themes that are really, really uncomfortable. It can be things that were very poorly done or executed. It's things that literally just make you shrink back and go like, ugh, like,
yes,
yeah.
Right.
No, it's literally, when we said cringeworthy, we meant things that you watched that made you cringe because it was so bad in some way or another. For whatever reason that I hesitate to use the word triggered, because that's a legitimate thing, but for whatever our trigger was for this particular anime, for whatever made us go like, ooh, it could, you know, it can be the quality of it, it can be, like I said, the theming of it, it can be bad voice acting or animation or terrible tropes or whatever. So we're just going to talk about real bad anime today.
Yes. And I will get the ball rolling with one that I've been waiting to rip a new one for a very long time. Ikitosen. Oh my god. It was a 26 episode series that was loosely based off of The Romance of the Three Kingdoms. And when I say loosely, I'm talking as loose as the quality of the female characters' school uniforms in the series.
Oh, I thought you were
going to
go somewhere else.
I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I was going to be like, dude, you got a problem.
No, not at all.
I thought you were going to talk like, you know, like, okay. Oh, I thought you were in the hallway or something.
Okay, oh no. I had to mind my words when I was thinking about the statement. Yeah, Ikitosen should have worked for me concept-wise. Like, I kind of like ecchi. I like ecchi when it's done in a certain way. I love battle anime. I love seinen, which is the genre that this series is made from. I like cute anime girls, and it has all these things. You know what it doesn't have? A coherent plot or likable characters. But let me go into the details about this. So, it is the tale of Hakafu Sansaku, who was destined to lead her high school into conquering all the schools within her community in the same way of The Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Like, every character somehow either has a direct bloodline to a Chinese conqueror, or they are the reincarnation of said Chinese conqueror. In which case, Hakafu Sansaku is both. She's also dumb as a brick. I'm not talking like dumb but smart on the side like some shonen protagonist. I'm talking like the I love everyone, but I still want to fight. And it just made her so annoying for the most part.
Was her patented move a headbutt?
I think it was, actually.
That explains a lot.
Yes. And I don't know what the hell these school uniforms are made out of, but a swift gust of wind would cut their blouses in half. And it was only the female characters. Never the guys. Somehow the guys, they were impervious to the wind. And it's like, whoever's making these clothes, they're a fucking pervert. And it seemed like every single character ran some trope. You had, like, you had your stupid happy Genki girl. You had your eye patch loli tsundere. You had your not quite lesbian character. And it's just like any character deaths in the series, they just never felt believable. And I was just like, oh my god, why am I still watching this? Because I want to see how it ends. And then it ended. And then I want to say 2007, they released a sequel series because the manga ran for a good long while. And they just came out with a sequel series in 2016. And I watched one episode of like the sequel series. I'm just like, no, we're not doing this again. Hell no. Never again. But I want to bring this up because of its spiritual successor. A little series called Queen's Blade, which was basically Ikitosen with swords. And that was probably the more the cringeworthy of the two. It's done by the same production team, the same manga artists and whatnot. But the thing that probably made it more cringy than Ikitosen was, aside from it being barbarian lolis, one of the characters was like this bunny loli girl with acidic breast milk.
Oh my god.
Yes, that was her special attack. And like every single character,
like just over the top crazy stuff, right?
Yes, over the top crazy armor. It's like basically taking the female armor characters from like most modern MMOs and making that like the standard.
Mm-hmm. How about the snake lady?
Oh god, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to. But yeah, so Ikitosen, I think I'm done talking about it because never again.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier, and I was saying how I remember watching Ikitosen on, like, the Funimation channel or something.
Yeah, just, like, blasting through it. Yeah.
Well, I remember just watching it in high school and laughing because it was just, it was so bad in the jiggle physics and clothes. it was so absurd. So me and my girlfriends were sitting there and we're watching it and we're jaws to the floor, absolutely howling with laughter. But what makes it so cringeworthy is that people take it seriously. Like, it's not meant to be a parody. It's not meant to be a joke. The intention was for an actual series. And that's what makes it so, like, so bad, because it would be funny if they meant to
make it a parody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be a great parody because it is legitimately the thing that anyone who hates anime can point to and say, this is what anime
yes.
is, with all of the really bad tropes are there.
Yeah, and they'd be right, too. Right?
Yeah.
It's like Tenjo Tenki done wrong.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can think to describe this series and how bad it is if you went to someone who knows what anime is and hates anime, this is the series that they would point to and say, all anime is like this, which is why I hate it. It's one of those things that, like, it gives the genre as a whole a bad name.
Mm-hmm. Britt, what you got for us?
I chose to go with Killing Stalking. This isn't an actual anime. This is going to be a Korean webcomic. But still, a lot of anime fans know it and love it, and as do I, but I want to do a trigger warning, sexual assault, rape. So I just read the whole thing today, within a couple hours. I was just,
oh god! You know,
yeah, I read the whole thing today. I burned through it. It was so rough. It's basically the story about this kid, Yunbum. He has a rough-ass life, and you learn a lot about that within this story, and his abusive uncle, how he had to deal with all of that. And then he has this crush on this guy that he goes to school with, you know, the popular guy, super handsome, and this infatuation becomes something more serious, where he goes to his house and, you know, what does he do? Put flour on the keypad so he can see the numbers that he presses every day.
Oh, yeah.
And he continuously goes to his house and tries to, you know, put in these numbers. And, you know, so at first, the first chapter, you're thinking, like, this kid's so creepy, you know? He's a stalker. And so he finally, you know, makes it into this house. Only just after, you know, a little run-in with the police right outside the house, which is such an interesting thing, you know, that will eventually come back to in the story. He makes it into this house, goes into the basement, and there is a woman down there, locked up in the basement, legs broken, beaten, naked. So you find out that Sungwoo, who is his name, that's his name, he is not, you know, the average guy everybody thinks he is. And of course, you know, he's not going to get out of there. Like, of course, Sungwoo comes back and ends up keeping him. So, you know, Sungwoo is incredibly abusive. The author of this actually had to come out and be like, this is not a good relationship. This is abuse. Mm-hmm. Like, this is bad. You are not supposed to ship this, which is a thing that people do because there's a lot of Stockholm syndrome that goes into this. Bum is, you know, he's infatuated with this guy, and he's been through so much. He's never had great friends or a family that he could connect to. I mean, he's raped by his uncle. So any sort of affection that Sungwoo gives him, whether or not he means it, he takes that seriously, and he thinks that, you know, this guy actually does have maybe feelings for me, you know? And it's so hard to read. And, you know, there are times where there was a time where he almost made it outside. Or no, he did make it outside.
He does make it outside.
Yeah.
And we say he makes it outside and whatnot. I want to point out, you kind of glossed over, he keeps him because he breaks his fucking legs with the baseball bat.
Yeah. Damn.
And then makes him crawl around the house and do chores with two seriously broken legs.
Yeah, he kind of sees Bum as his mother, who he killed. He killed his parents. We find that out as well. So, you know, he sees him as like a surrogate mother in some weird fucked up way. And yeah, he realizes that there's a trust factor there, that he does, you know, trust him and he loves him or whatever, you know, that he is compliant. So he lets him, you know, roam around the house and he gives him free rein. But he says, if you cross this line, I will cut your throat. And, you know, there's a time where he goes out for a couple hours. He lets him know, like, I'll be back in 7 hours. Don't cross that line. And yeah, he does. He goes outside and he's right there sitting on the steps. And it's raining at this point, and he's out there, and he's yelling, like, someone save me. And then Sungwoo starts yelling, save him. But he knows that nobody's going to hear him, and that he has this control over him. And it's so fucking scary. Mm-hmm. We know I love horror, so this story is right up my alley. But how anybody on God's green earth could ever ship these two, it's literally disgusting. Like,
that's the biggest part of what makes it cringeworthy.
Yeah,
that people really do. They look at them and be like, oh, they're meant to be and blah, blah, blah. And no, it is abusive in every possible sense of the word. It is physically, it is emotionally, it is mentally, it is, and it's somehow, the fandom somehow justifies it as being okay because it's a serial killer and a stalker. So they're both bad people, but it's still
messed up.
It's still super messed up. Yeah.
I was going to say one instance in the series that I've noticed. This is a big spoiler. There's a cop character whose name I forgot. He brings Bum in, and he's trying to get a testimony from him. And classic Stockholm syndrome. Bum's just like, nope, nothing's happening. I inflicted these wounds on myself.
Yeah, but see, within that whole scene, you see Sungwoo, like, reaching out to him, being like, let him sit next to me, Bum, are you okay? Like, you know, really showing that he cares. And it's really gross because you don't see that as much in the house, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are times where they open up to each other and they do kind of humanize him in some weird fucking way. But, like, there's always, you know, that fact that he has done this, you know? Like, mm-hmm. there's no amount of humanizing you can do to justify what the fuck is happening right now. Like,
no, and that's especially what makes it so scary is that real life abusive relationships work that way. Maybe not necessarily to the extent that this comic is, but the baseline of know when they're good, they're so, so good, and it's mm-hmm. worth sticking around through the bad for that good.
So, needless to say, I spent the last couple hours, as you can hear, I'm really sick, so I'm just, like, sitting in this chair in the corner, like, reading this manga all day, just the whole time my roommate's like, are you okay? Like, no,
nothing's okay. Nothing will ever be okay ever again.
It's definitely an intriguing series, and
yeah, it's really good. It's well written. Yes. I like it a lot. The art style is really great. But yeah, it's rough. It's really cringy. It's
I was gonna say, I mean, aside from straight up psycho fans thinking that it's a love story, it really is an incredible webcomic. I like it a lot for the depraved psychological depths that it, like, goes to.
Oh, yeah.
Delving into the minds of the victim and of the abuser, knowing that neither of these people are good people, but, like, still somehow sympathizing. It's incredibly complex.
Yeah.
It's incredibly complex, and it's worth the read. It's very good. If you can deal with, you know, the rape and abuse and trauma and all that jazz, it's worth a read. But it is, I agree that it's pretty cringeworthy in just the subject material.
Oh yeah, that was a lot. Lots of cringe and done today.
Definitely not for the faint of heart.
So in terms of shitty relationships like that, right? Look at Joker and Harley Quinn and how that's like over whatever. Like,
that's I know. I hate seeing pictures. There's that picture of them like playing video games together. It's like, fuck Romeo and Juliet. I want a relationship like the Joker and Harley Quinn. And I'm like, no,
you don't.
It's
a terrible relationship.
One of the only we're gonna digress for a second here because I'm a DC nerd. But one of the few good things that the 52 reboot did, on the whole, 52 reboot was shit. But it did a couple of good things, including fully emancipating Harley from the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Completely leaves his ass.
Yep.
And, like, actually addresses the fact that, no, this was super fucking abusive.
Yep. And there's also a part, I think she's fighting Deathstroke or something like that, and she's like, well, you know, I've been hit harder than that, so.
Yeah. No, and because she's still Harley, like, she makes all the wisecracks about it, but you also get to see, a little bit of Dr. Harleen Quinzel, who she used to be, who she's an incredibly
intelligent
person who knows what's going on throughout all of this. And just was trapped in the cycle of abuse, and now that she's out of it, she's still forever damaged, but you get to see, between the jokes about it, moments of seriousness about it.
I was going to say that, comparing the relationship in Killing Stalking and Harley and Joker, Harley and Joker seems tame by comparison.
In some ways, yeah. On the day-to-day, it seems pretty tame, but you do have to remember that the Joker literally strapped Harley to a rocket and shot her out of the window, this and she would true. Have died except the fact that Poison Ivy, they first met because Poison Ivy came across this woman strapped to a fucking rocket saved her life.
So, just a quick PSA. If you want a dark couple to imitate, Gomez and
Morticia Adams.
Yep. That's...
If you want a dark couple to emulate
you guys
couple
nerds.
Goals, that's the couple. Just throwing that out
Romance
there.
Romance is alive in that one. Gold. They're just... Yeah. God, they're just so crazy about each other.
I'm a real big fan of parodies, but I really had a power through this one. And this is another one pulling up from the old Comcast Funimation On Demand days back in the early 2000s. This one, little gem, is called Puni Puni Poemi. Now, a lot of people think it's from the creative Excel Saga, but it's not. It started up as an inside joke, and the director of Excel Saga, you know what? Let's bring this joke to fruition.
Oh my god. No. Brings back so many memories.
It takes a hell of a lot of jabs at the magical girl trope. Just running it right into the ground. It has been years, but I do remember, like, there were alien assassins, like, from the waist up. They were dressed like pimps. They were pantsless, and they had, like, these sort of whip-like tail genitalia hanging out the front with, like...
Can you describe my face right now as you're talking about this?
The cringe is strong in this one right now. The cringe is strong.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Because I still remember that shit. God damn it.
Ugh. I have definitely not seen this before. So you say that it was... It's legitimately a parody, but that doesn't change the fact that it's really hard to watch.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a parody, but without the clear comedy aspect.
Oh, there is clear comedy. Oh, okay. It's just like sometimes it goes way fucking overboard.
Oh, God.
I like to say that when they were pinning the script, there was like a mountain of coke next to the typewriter. It's like, hit a paragraph.
No, I think it was actually meth.
Paragraph on the line.
God damn it.
They were definitely on some sort of hyperactive drug. And they bring back some characters from Excel Saga, like Nabashin. And his bride at the very end, Kumi, whom their marriage was interrupted by the creator, Koshi Rikto, by saying this is a bullshit ending. They ended in like a classic, like, Double Dragon, like, leg clash, and they're just frozen in there. And Kumi's like, hey, this is bullshit. I'm just walking away from this. Well, that's how that series ended anyways. But, yeah, they found their way into this short two-episode series.
First of all, I want to give props to the voice actors, Cynthia Rodriguez and Yumiko Kobayashi, for being able to run their mouths as fast as they did, like, and I'm just like, what the hell are you saying? Slow down!
Surprised they still have tongues after that.
Yes, and even more with that, Yumiko Kobayashi doing the theme song, and with a live-action video of her singing it, because why not?
She also did refer to herself as Kobayashi in the show, too, breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, Jesus. I'm at a loss for words trying to describe my feelings towards this series. Because, again, the ball sack aliens.
Yeah.
they had, like, spike balls at the ends of them. They were, like,
perverted. Weaponized genitalia.
Yes.
And they also spoke in, like, bullshit jargon. Like,
jive talking.
Yeah, like, oh big jive talking.
Scat talking.
Oh, no.
Scat fap doobly-doo. Oh.
That was their alien language.
God damn it.
And they wore fedoras.
And the Mars.
God damn it.
And the Martian invaders looked like the ones from Metal Slug. Like the octopus with the tentacles.
Oh my god. How the hell did this get made? That's...
Well, you just said it was a joke. It was a joke that went too far. Oh, man.
Even jokes can make you cringe.
Jokes often make you cringe.
Right.
Yep.
Alright, so my choice is not a joke. Oh god. I decided to watch Diabolik Lovers. And this is an anime based on a Japanese dating sim game. And I'm just going to read to you real quick the synopsis right off of the plot synopsis. It says, the heroine, Komori Yui, was a normal teenage girl until her second year of high school. Her father, a priest, has to go overseas for work. As a result, Yui is sent to a new town and arrives alone at a mansion she was told will be her new home. At the mansion, no one greets her, however. The door swings open on its own accord. Yui enters the mansion to find herself alone. As she explores, she finds a handsome young man with no heartbeat on a couch. To her shock, he awakens, and five other young men gradually appear. Yui soon notices something different about all of them. She discovers that all six of them are brothers, but by three different mothers, and they all turn out to be vampires.
Jesus Christ.
So that's the way this thing is phrased. It's framed as a romance, and it's framed as there's a greater mystery in the house. And you're trying to figure out what's the story behind these boys and their three different mothers. One of them, was killed on the property, and her spirit is still wandering around. What's going on with that? It's all framed that way, and still you have all these guys that are obsessed with this one girl, and she's kind of supposed to choose between them. Here's the cringeworthy part. Because none of that was the cringeworthy part. Here's the cringeworthy part.
Uh-oh. These vampires wasn't bad enough.
Oh my god. This thing is framed completely wrong. It should be framed as a horror. The situation is straight up horror. Every single one of these six brothers consistently feeds off this girl who has literally been sacrificed to them by the church. And every time they go to feed on her, she says no and she tries to fight them off. It is the most upsettingly clear rape metaphor every single time. And she's completely helpless in this situation. To the point where she's so helpless that as you're watching, you feel compelled to victim blame her and say, why aren't you fighting back harder? Like, God, why aren't you doing anything? And you have to take a step back and go, because there is absolutely fucking nothing that she can do. There is literally nothing that she can do. She tries to escape. She tries to fight back. And she fails every single time because she is dealing with literal monsters. And they all treat her, and because they're all hot, this is somehow excusable, but they all treat her deplorably. Not even as, like, an object, but they torment her. One of them never calls her by her name, refers to her from the start as Bitch-chan. He only ever calls her Bitch-chan. Someone else only ever calls her Pancake because she's flat. Like, they're just all really gross, creepy guys who are, like I said, literal monsters on top of being... Literal monsters on top of being, you know, actually in a creepy, abusive situation. And all of this, again, I would like it more if they framed it that way. But they frame it as a dating sim with a mystery subplot. And it's really, really upsetting the way that they continually ignore this girl's agency and somehow make it feel like she chose to be there because she doesn't kill them. She's given an opportunity, she's given a knife so that she can potentially kill them, but she doesn't have this in her. Mm. And she gets perversely invested in them and their pasts, but that doesn't excuse, and they all have super tragic, super bad, like, bad news pasts. Terrible, terrible things happen to all of them. And again, that's used as a framing device to almost, like, excuse their behavior. And it's just, it was really upsetting to watch because you get sucked into this story and you get sucked into this, like, you go in expecting a dark vampire, you know, dating sim. You expect to go in and say, oh, she has to choose between all these troubled guys and which one can she fix? But they're all like, one of them tries to drown her. One of them tries to poison her. One of them tries to, it's like, one of them tries to kill her and turn her into a wax model.
What the fuck?
Talk yeah.
I definitely don't want to play this game.
So that's a dating sim where you choose one where you want to live? Like, okay, which one won't kill me?
I don't know. It's really upsetting. And so here's the thing is I was talking to a friend of mine about this series, and I've only watched the first season of the anime, and that's what I'm basing this all off of, is what I've seen. So I'm talking to my friend about this. She goes, oh my god, I love that game. And she's talking to me about all these other horrifying details that they don't get into in the anime about these boys' pasts. And again, she was saying it's like, oh, because you feel so bad for them. And it's so-and-so was raped by his mother and so-and-so was made to watch. And so it makes them sympathetic somehow.
Oh, God.
And just listening to her, yeah, the way that it's all framed is that apparently... And you get this feeling in the anime too, but she was talking about how in the game you're making choices, and as you get to know them more and more and know about their tragic pasts, like, they open up and you have to pick one to almost to, like, to be with and to fix. And it was just like,
no.
Ugh.
No.
Ugh.
I can feel the crow's feet growing right by my eyes right now by the amount I'm squinting.
Oh my god. Yeah. No. So, some of the things we've been talking about, you know, I would recommend. What Mechanical was talking about sounds hysterical, and I kind of want to watch it. What 606 was talking about is appropriately framed and is really, really, like, is good if you go in expecting that. Stay away from Diabolic Lovers. It is horrifying because, again, if it were framed as a horror, it would be really interesting. But it is framed as a romance and a mystery, and that makes the whole thing super uncomfortable.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that's just like that's not just like an isolated concept with anime, manga, or dating sims. There are plenty of other games, and especially dating sims, that are like that have that level of cringe. Mm-hmm. It's an industry standard because. Just from, like, my own experience in Japan, like, there is a disconnect between love and true connections and just displays of emotion. Mm-hmm. And it can create, like, these distorted looks on love and mess with the heads of the creators where they just feel like, oh, I'm just going to vent my demons here. And they make bank, and that's why they keep doing them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Even in... That's funny, because even in Mystic Messenger, where the first, you know, couple routes you do, they're nice and cute and... like, really great. It's a wonderful game. My favorite ever. you get to, like, Seiran's route, and that gets really, really deep and really scary, and you do, you know, see some of those lines with him and Rika, and so that's, like, yeah. It's really interesting.
But even, like, in those games, you know, you have those other legitimate relationships to go after. Absolutely. You have other things. This is nothing but terrible, terrible guys.
Mm. And even with, like, there's one bad route that you can do with Jumin, and it's really kind of weird. Like, he ends up, like, putting you in this cage and, like, tying you up and, like, you know.
Kinky, no? Yeah, it sounds like a Saturday night.
Oh, geez. It's, like, really creepy, but, like, all of us love it. Because, you know, they also give Jumin his good route, where he is great. And
yeah.
And that, you know? And so the bad route, where it's just, like, kind of crazy, is just like, oh, that's just Jumin just being kinky. It's fine.
But there's Jumin's such a huge freaky. Difference between, like, freak and kink and whatnot you know, and abuse.
Oh, Yeah,
there's a huge, huge difference between those, which I could talk about for a very long time, I won't.
Well, I mean, you know, the power transfer that happens in some of those relationships are done with consent, and that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. That's the biggest part of it is consent.
Yeah.
And that's what made Diabolic Lovers so upsetting is that there isn't even a gradual acceptance. There isn't even, like, a Stockholm Syndrome type thing where eventually she welcomes it. Like, it's literally non-stop, super vocal, no, I do not want this. I do not give you my consent.
Mm-hmm. That's
I'm good
no
with that,
bueno, yeah. All right, so... because I'm the smoothest voice. We save the best for last.
There is no best in this category.
my choice is a little controversial because it has such big fandoms. And that's why I say it's probably the best. No, I'm kidding. I'll stop tooting my own horn. my first pick is going to be Vampire Knight. Yeah, go ahead. Get over it in 3, 2, 1. All right, so Vampire
Knight. Oh, vampires.
So Vampire Knight, all right, came out as an anime roughly around 2008, 2009. This is when the Twilight craze was at its height. And as an adult male, I was really, really sick and tired of hearing about all these stupid vampire plots.
Team Blade.
All this crazy. Yo, for real, Team Blade. Slashing people left and right.
Team Nosferatu.
Yo, right?
Right on.
For real. Anywho, so all this vampire craze was going on, and it was getting really, really annoying having to see all these vampire plots. So my buddy, he said, hey, check out Vampire Knight. It's pretty cool. It's like 13 episodes. And I like short and sweet. So I said, all right, whatever. I'll try it. So I started watching it. And, you know, at some point, especially coming off of Helsing, at some point, you expect to see vampires killing vampires. And, you know, there might be some action, but it never gets that violent. And I'm like, well, all right, when's the shoe going to drop? Because I'm getting real tired of watching this girl pining over these two dudes, all right? So I'm watching it, 12 episodes in. I'm like, all right, there's got to be some sort of crazy climax. Episode 13, nothing freaking happens, man. So so my beef with this whole thing is that I have to suffer through this chick pining over a vampire who's like super cute and whatever, and all the girls like have a fandom off of him, and then this other dude, Zero, who's like mad, I don't even know what to call it. He's butthurt because the vampires killed his family way back in the day. Get the heck over it. Your name is Zero. Start at Zero. So he's just butthurt about all this crazy BS. And I'm like, when is this action gonna happen? There's nothing that happens. So it doesn't even draw me in. It didn't draw me in. And I was like, well, what the shit? When is the shoe gonna drop? I watched it in its entirety just to see if the shoe would drop or not. It never fucking happened.
Okay? Oh, that's not cringeworthy. That's just you went in expecting an action with vampire, and you got a high school slice of life.
No. The high school slice of life is what was cringeworthy. Because she's just pining over.
Yeah, over, what no, is it? I agree.
Is it Konami or something like that?
Konami.
Yeah, she's pining over him, thinking about him, lusting over him. And then meanwhile, there's Zero over here, and he's like, hi, pay attention to me, senpai, or whatever. And it just never happens. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this trope has been seen so many times on American TV shows, TV shows. I mean, it's been seen everywhere. So I already know what's happening next. And that's what makes it so cringeworthy, because this had the potential of being something awesome. Because you have all this, like, stuff for young adults and whatnot. And it could have had the potential of being awesome. And here we are with the same old story. Yet again in 2K8. WTF.
Right? I was going to say, so basically what you're saying is the thing that makes it cringeworthy is mediocrity.
Yes.
As someone who loves stories of unrequited love, I completely concur. Ever since I was a teenager, I've just hated that concept. Just like, just kiss already.
Yo, for real.
And that was what I just steered clear of this one, because, like, I would, like, do a little research here and there, but I never wanted to watch the series because the animation didn't look impressive at all. And the character designs just look vanilla.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I did read the manga for this because I had a friend who was super into it, and I read the manga, and there's a lot more to the manga than the anime. Mm. It's still not great. It's still all pretty mediocre, but at least you get some, like, interesting backstories in the manga.
Miss me with that shit. Fair
enough. What do you got for runners up?
Oh, you mean dishonorable mentions?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Guys. Anyone at this table who's ever been to Bad Anime Bad, say it with me. Garzy's Wing.
Yes.
Garzy's Wing.
God, yes.
I love that show.
Yeah. Don't listen to him, folks.
No one loves that show.
No.
People love to hate it.
Yes.
People love to hate it.
For my dishonorable mention, I'm going to bring up a show that's called School Days. Oh, it's based off a visual novel series, and it's about this character named Makoto Ito who is trying to get one of his classmates, and it takes a trope of having a friend like groom the guy to become the ideal male. The girl that grooms him, like, they form a bond, and then she falls in love with him. He fucks around with her. Fucks around with a couple other girls, also in the game and in the anime, and then he goes after the girl of his dreams. He gets her. And then Makoto cheats on the girl that trained him again, and so he dumps his dream girl for her. The dream girl says, "Oh, I'm pregnant." So Makoto goes back to the dream girl again, and then when the friend who basically groomed him catches wind of this, she wants to confirm it, so she cuts the girl's stomach open.
Damn.
You know, there are these things called pregnancy tests.
Yeah. And then
I was off when you started talking about the Pygmalion trope, but man, does this go further than that.
Oh, it gets worse. She kills Makoto afterwards. And just, like, caresses his head at the end of the series.
Neat.
Yes, so. Oh, yes. Yeah, so that's another one I say don't watch at all. Don't. Just don't.
All right, so my dishonorable mention might be an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to have to say Eromanga Sensei. That shit just creeps me out. If you don't know about it, there's this girl, Sagiri. She's like this little teeny tiny girl, like, she's a little kid, and, you know, she moves in with, like, her stepbrother, like, her, you know, she gets this new stepbrother who is a little bit older than she is, and it's about their weird, like, brother-sister relationship. I don't really know. I didn't get through the whole anime because, like, it creeped me out, like, honestly, just the dynamic between the two of them, the fact that she's so young, I get the loli trope, whatever.
I can't stand the loli. I can't do it.
They sexualize this tiny girl so much that, like, I couldn't get through it. It literally, like, grossed me out, and I know that a lot of people really like it, but not for me. The sibling trope and, you know, little girl, like, no. No.
So you're not going to watch Citrus?
I did start watching Citrus. I watched the first couple episodes. But again, step-siblings. It's so overdone. Like, can we please get a lesbian anime that's not sisters or, like, some weird shit? Like, I don't know. But yeah, Eromanga Sensei is a big nope from me.
Nope.
What you got for us, Mark?
My dishonorable mention is an old movie that, for me, it felt more like false advertising. Battle Royale High School.
Oh, shit.
I was expecting, like, oh, snap, an anime version of the movie Battle Royale.
I have an interesting piece of trivia, actually, about that. That was dubbed in my home state, North Carolina. Like, I live, like, two towns around from Animega Studios.
Oh.
Yes. So that was actually, and I actually bought that DVD just for nostalgia's sake alone. It was not good at all.
No, but me and my brother were watching it, and, like, we were both big fans of Battle Royale, the movie, you know, where all the students are pretty much on an island killing each other, so in case, like, that thing on their neck blows up.
Yep.
But anyways, like, we were watching this, and it's like, okay, when are they being sent to the island? They're still at the school. Why haven't they been sent to the island yet? What's happening? And, like, there's all this weird, like, interdimensional shit going on. It's like, what does this have to do with Battle Royale?
Absolutely nothing.
Not a goddamn thing.
Ugh. Ugh, that just took me for a loop.
Magged.
I already gave my dishonorable mention.
Oh, yes, you did.
Garzy's win. All
right, how about you, Giuseppe?
Alright, so my dishonorable mention is going to be Inuyasha. Now, I'm going to give you 3 seconds to get over it.
Fuck you!
2, 1. Alright, so here's my beef with Inuyasha, right? Season, like, 1 and 2 was phenomenal.
Yes!
Because you have Inuyasha doing his demon thing, and you see the love interest budding between him and Kagome.
And the ending credits.
It just, like,
it falls flat. Like
talk I'm gonna about Kanye it. You for a minute.
All right.
Okay. So yes, after like when they get away from the manga material, it becomes shit. The studio actually was nice enough to pull a Brotherhood and create like a sequel series called The Final Chapter, essentially made up for all that bullshit because they were able to take the manga material from the finale and just say, "We're sorry. We know we fucked up."
I'm just saying, 154 episodes, and that's the best you can give me? Fuck out of here, man. Get the fuck out of here.
It's a long series, and oh man, do they repeat the same plot line over.
Over
and over. Over and over. And it was good the first time around.
And you think some stuff's gonna go down between Inuyasha and his brother, but does it happen?
Nope.
My fluffy sashi.
Say goodbye to your arm. Alright, we cool.
Sashomaru, the original Bishi.
Well, I mean, even in the manga, they just become frenemies.
Yep.
Nah, man. I wanted some Cain and Abel, like, killing shit. That's the expectation
I
was set.
No, not that kind of anime, my friend.
The third movie actually had them fighting most of the movie, so that was...
I was gonna say, they do fight. They do fight, but it's very often, one of them absolutely does not kill or, like, terribly wound the other. They always end up...
Stalemate.
Parting ways. Yeah, stalemating, honestly. But it's still... They stalemate, and yet Inuyasha still somehow loses.
Yo, the mediocrity
of Sashomaru just always comes out on top based on sheer attitude.
It's like Bleach, man. Like, Bleach has so much potential. Bleach has so much potential. And then, like, I was like, okay, so here's how every season is going to function. He gets a new power. Mm-hmm. He trains. Mm-hmm. Fights somebody better than him.
Gets
stronger and overcomes him. And that's been every season. Every season. Even the filler season with all those vampires or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing. Don't talk to me about no Hueco Mundo. I don't want to hear none of that crap, man. It was the same thing in season one.
It really was.
Miss me with that shit, man.
Well, that's because T.J. Kubo doesn't know how to write manga for shit.
So it was like nothing but Altered Beast. Just power up.
Pretty much.
Yep. It's the, and I hate to draw this comparison, but it's the DBZ. It's the Dragon Ball syndrome, is the just constantly powering up and powering up and powering up and powering up. And where's the cap? There is no cap!
That's why I love One Punch Man.
Yeah.
Like,
and Hiraka. And Hiraka. Hiraka also has a similar power ceiling, so. Mm-hmm.
Mob Psycho 100.
Very true. Mm-hmm. Well, that's because it's done by the same manga, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually cheat a little bit and do one more dishonorable mention.
Hey!
Yeah, I do what I want.
Dishonor!
Okay, so just my extra dishonorable mention. It's not actually a full series. It is the actual final episode of Excel Saga. Yes. That was like where they had all this extra content and it was not released on television in Japan.
I caused a flashback, didn't I?
Yes, you did. I'm under the belief that it helped lead to the creation of Puni Puni Puin Me in hindsight. Yeah. Because it was just like anything they could get away with, they just did. There was a scene where I don't remember the doctor's name, I think it was Dr. Udoji. He had like this ongoing like fetishism of underage girls.
Yeah.
It was really, that was super fucking cringy. And then when he finally got married to his dream loli, she disrobes herself and says, "I'm a G cup." And like the breast just hit him in the face. He's like, nope, I'm done.
No. She says, like, "No, will you still accept me even though I'm a consenting adult?"
Oh, God. Yes.
Ugh. That's just.
Yeah, that was the point where I'm just like, no, I tap out. Yep. I tap out. You win, Ricto. You're a fucking asshole. It was a collaborative fuck you from Nabashin and Toshi Ricto. But goddamn that episode. It makes me uncomfortable thinking about it now, because...
Excel and Hyatt swapping bodies.
Yes. And then the finale was like, Minchi's voice actor was... The dog that was constantly the butt of a lot of jokes in the series. Her voice actress actually sang a translated version of Minchi's lament song from the end of the series. With a dog collar around her neck. And I'm just like, why?
Well, they just swapped places. Minchi was like barking out like the subtitles rather than she reading out what he was saying.
It was like the icing on the cringe cake.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to end it there because I don't want... I'm going to need a cold shower now from how all awkward right. I feel by that.
Ugh. So I guess if this is the first episode you're listening to, I'm so sorry. But I kind of want to close it out with after everything that we've talked about all these negative things, just to remind everybody that we do, in fact, love anime. It's a huge umbrella. It's a huge umbrella. Indeed. Anime is just an animation style that can then include all kinds of genres. Anybody can do it. And so for as much great, amazing stuff there is out there, there is also a lot of bad, and that can be said about absolutely every genre.
Right on.
So this was our little homage to the seedy underbelly that no one wants to talk about. we'll provide that service for you. We'll talk about it. We're here for it.
Yes. We're about that life.
But, you know, go out and watch some good anime and remind yourself that we do, in fact, love this. We do, in fact, love anime, despite some of the terrible things that happen.
I will say this much. It is important to be critical of things you enjoy. Even even animation as an art form. If you can't be critical of it, you can't really... you're not allowing yourself to discern certain aspects of it.
It's not an art form if you can't pick it apart in some way.
And for those people who like to rain the parade of anyone who thinks critically, I say a big fuck you. Yeah. So, you're like, I can think and you can't apparently. So, bye.
All right. well, that was Byron D. Zero signing out, apparently. Just bye. Maggleby saying peace out. See y'all next week.
This is Mechanical saying, I have claimed victory in this psychic war.
And as always, 606 signing out.
And this is Megatron here with the smoothest voice. I know you're hurt, but I'll be back.
If there's still enough room in here after his ego, I'm going to say bye for everyone. See you next episode. Bye. Ja! Bye.